COVID-19 has changed grocery shopping runs from a boring chore to an excursion. Some of us feel a great appreciation that at least one activity remains consistent, even though it might look a little different. While some popular items may be out of stock, there's still a lot of stuff to buy and eat, and the history of the supermarket is all about abundance and the appearance of abundance. Our next guest says the COVID-19 era is just the latest chapter in a long and changing history of the supermarket. Bianca Bosker is a contributing writer at The Atlantic. She wrote a recent piece about supermarkets. Bianca, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, you start your piece off on grocery stores. Looking back at your childhood memories of growing up, why does that strike a nostalgic chord with you?
Well, I think that I always felt this way, but I think a lot of people have also sparked sort of a reappreciation for the supermarket in the midst of everything that's been going on. And, you know, I would argue that supermarkets may be routine, but they are anything but ordinary. They are amazing, unlikely places that just sort of boggle the imagination when you get right down to it.
And in the span of human history, they're pretty new, and they were, you write, a really revolutionary innovation. Can you talk about sort of the before and after of the supermarket?
Yeah, totally revolutionary. So first, let's define what a supermarket is. So technically speaking, a supermarket is a place that houses between 15,000 to 60,000 different items that satisfy our desire to buy everything from tampons to slice turkey within a single, you know, under a single roof. They're huge. They've about quadrupled in size in the last 90 years. The first one in America, I should say that, you know, they really are a pretty distinctly American phenomenon. The first one in the U.S. was actually emerged in 1930 in Jamaica, Queens, in New York. And they were just marvels. You have to keep in mind that for about 300 years before that, we would get things to eat, you know, in sort of outdoor markets, places that, you know, people would bring, you know, the meat to be butchered, produce. But these were places that had mud, there was flies, there was haggling, bargaining. And supermarkets really took the Fordist factory with its emphasis on efficiency and standardization and turned it into a place to shop for food. And they were actually so revolutionary that when Queen Elizabeth came on her first, I believe, official state visit to the United States, she specifically requested a tour of a Maryland giant food. Likewise, Boris Yeltsin, he also had a very official state visit to Texas and took an unscheduled detour to a Texas supermarket that is credited with souring him on communism, that he just saw this bounty of choice, this overwhelming, you know, encyclopedic choice that you find at the typical supermarket. So I think that's interesting to keep in mind when we perhaps grumble about having to, you know, roll our carts down the aisles.
And you write some about what a logistical feat it is to get stuff into stores, especially when it comes to produce. You spend some time with a trucker who, you know, will go from Washington to Florida or whatever with produce. Produce is a really fussy thing to carry in a truck, it turns out.
Yeah, so she, I wrote about the sort of different individuals that make up the supply chain. And supply chain is, I think, sometimes sounds like a boring word for what is a really miraculous operation, even more so in the midst of a pandemic. But yeah, so I spent some time speaking with a trucker who hauls reefer, and basically reefer, you know, is a refrigerated truck. And she spends a lot of time hauling produce, which is considered sort of one of the most finicky things that a trucker can move around the country, because it turns out that produce is very temperamental, right? It goes bad. It can get too cold. It can get too hot. Apples are very gassy, as it turns out, which can make a lot of other produce that it might travel with turn brown. So it really is, it's a feat. And it's one that was, you know, also difficult and concerning, especially because at the time when I was writing this piece in April, she found it really difficult to not only find masks and you know, Lysol, but even to find food. I mean, it was an incredible and depressing irony that here she was bringing in this case, apples from Wenatchee, Washington to Florida. And, you know, she couldn't find sliced bread to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
We are talking about the history of the supermarket, how it's changed over the years, how it's changing today. Bianca Bosker is with us from The Atlantic. She wrote a piece, "The Pandemic Shows Us the Genius of Supermarkets." There have been changes in the current era, you write, not just because of COVID. There's a change in ownership with these investment groups buying grocery stores, and it doesn't turn out so great sometimes for the supermarkets and their customers.
Yeah, so I did kind of focus my story on a supermarket chain. I mean, sort of small, but it was growing, called Fairway, that was a real New York City institution. It's where my home is. And, you know, it did see this change of ownership and infusion of private equity money that we've seen really changing the landscape for many supermarkets around the country, and unfortunately not always for the better. I think the other thing that's interesting is the way that the supermarket is both, again, sort of seems like, well, I guess it seems a bit, you know, humble. It's where we get our staples, but the amount of research and kind of scientific papers that have looked at how we behave in supermarkets in order to try and tweak our behavior and get us to buy more is just fascinating. I mean, the science of supermarkets kind of blew my mind. I don't think I'll ever shop for groceries the same way again.
Well, what kind of things are they trying to figure out about how to get us to buy stuff?
Well, so first of all, like, what do they know? Well, what they found out through a combination of things like surveys and eye tracking and cameras is that we spend, well, a lot of our time in, quote, and this is an official scientific term, ineffective wandering at the supermarket. So the average supermarket visit, is about 13 minutes in length. And only about 30% of that time do we actually spend buying something. And when we do buy something, that process actually does happen pretty quickly. Apparently, it's on average 13 seconds, and that includes, you know, wandering down the aisle, finding the thing that you're looking for, and plucking it off the shelf. I mean, I feel like I spend that much time, you know, just staring slack-jawed at mustard alone. I mean, it's just, I don't know. But, you know, what I think that information is then used to determine planograms. So the layout of a supermarket is very carefully engineered down to the square inch. First, when you look at the whole level of the store, most supermarkets tend to be organized sort of what I would describe as like a reverse mullet. So you've got party in the front and business in the back. So you walk in and there's this abundant bounty of colorful produce. Whereas the staples, the things like your bread and milk, tends to be tucked further in the back. And there are various explanations for that. But one of them is really that by putting the things that we need to have further back, it does force us to walk through the whole store and hopefully pick up some things along the way. When you get down to the level of the shelf, again, you've got these planograms that take that information about, you know, studies that find that we think more highly of products placed on higher shelves and sort of meets out what products will go where based on that. So, for example, some grocers put their higher margin items at eye level because those move more quickly. We tend to buy more of them. On the other hand, data is one way to choose where things go, but cash is another. And many supermarkets do employ slotting fees, which basically means that, you know, you are seeing those cookies on that particular golden spot on the shelf because someone paid very handsomely to put them there.
I want to end on what might lead to a public service announcement here. You talk to also a retail worker, somebody who works at the checkout at a grocery store, and I've done this at a much smaller grocery store. Most people are nice. Some people are mean. And during COVID, this is a tough job. Can you talk about the experience that that she had at some of the tougher times?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it seems like very difficult work, right? I mean, you're on your feet, you can get sore backs. And, you know, there's so many difficult parts of the job, but it was really disheartening to hear to what extent we, the customers, the people, were the disheartening part of the job, you know, really, you know, giving people a hard time, being rude, being gruff. And I was really inspired by this person who worked at a Fairway in New York City who really, you know, actually just turned it into an opportunity to try and kind of turn people's days around, to kind of crack jokes, lighten their mood after waiting in these long lines. But, you know, it's incredibly difficult work. And again, people at all parts of the supply chain, the truckers, the cashiers, the people working, at the Hunts Point Market, for example, just really impressive. Again, amazing and extraordinary, even though it can feel very ordinary and some might even say boring to go to the supermarket. I hope to change that perspective.
Bianca, thanks a lot for sharing this with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Bianca Bosker is a contributing writer at The Atlantic, where she wrote the piece, "The Pandemic Shows Us the Genius of Supermarkets." You can read more about what goes on behind the scenes at the supermarket.